Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, the Charles Barkley saga rolls on with a new and unexpected twist. And welcome back to the Sports Media Watch podcast. I'm John Lewis. I'll be joined by Drew Lerner shortly. Full disclosure, Drew and I taped the usual podcast on Tuesday before the news came out that Charles Barkley plans to stay with WBD and TNT Sports long-term and exclusively, which means that he's not going to retire. And he's not going to move to a network that has NBA rights. He's going to stay with TNT and do whatever it is that they can figure out to do with him in the absence of having the NBA. I don't know how that's going to work, but that seems to be the plan. Joe Flint of the Wall Street Journal did report that WBD is considering transforming inside the NBA into a general sports program that would allow Charles to speak about some of the rights that WBD has outside of the NBA, hockey, for example. Honestly, this seems really more than anything to be a circumstance where WBD cannot accept that it blew it, that it lost the NBA, and it cannot accept that the era of the past 40 years is going to end. And that's understandable to an extent, but this is a professional industry. And one of the most important things to do in a professional industry is to accept when you've been beaten. WBD simply cannot accept that it has lost the NBA, that inside the NBA necessarily has to end, that ultimately the decision that was made without a lot of forethought by David Zaslav to say, we don't have to have the NBA, the decision to say that has cost WBD dearly. And they just can't accept it. So they're going to say, oh yeah, well, you took the rights away. We're going to air inside the NBA anyway. How? You say, well, we're going to do inside sports. Jack and Kenny aren't going to do that. It'll just be Ernie and Charles. I don't even know if Ernie would want to do it, but I mean, if it's just Ernie and Charles, that's their podcast. They already do that. I think it's very important that people understand that Charles Barkley is extremely popular. He's one of the most popular athletes of all time. But he's not Midas. Everything he touches doesn't turn to gold. He has done, on any number of occasions, news shows, general sports shows. They've all been short-lived. King Charles was short-lived. Listen Up, more than 20 years ago, was short-lived. And I might be the only person outside of Ernie who even remembers Listen Up, because I don't even think Charles remembers Listen Up, right? Just because you put Charles Barkley on a show doesn't mean people are going to tune in. And I think it's very important that people understand the NBA part of inside the NBA is a very important aspect of it. If you put Inside the NBA on and there's no game leading out of it or leading into it, because Inside technically is also the pregame show, even though they don't call it that. If there's no actual NBA programming that Inside is airing alongside, I don't know that people tune in. It's a bad example, but they did do Inside the NBA for a few weeks during COVID. They did one right after the NBA season was suspended, and they did a few more during the summer. It's not a great example because, you know, they weren't in the studio together for a lot of those. It was the COVID era production where it's just four boxes of people in their homes. But they did do Inside the NBA, and people did not tune in because people are watching Inside the NBA as part of, you know, an NBA doubleheader. Think of Inside the NBA as the bread and the sandwich. You got to have the meat in there, right? Or whatever, the condiments or the vegetables, whatever it is you like in a sandwich. You got to have some you got to have something other than the bread there. And Inside the NBA without the NBA isn't going to be the kind of hit that people think. So WBD, in my view, is, again, in denial. The most important thing that they can do at WBD is accept their situation and adjust accordingly, because it's not the end of the world. They'll take a big hit, but it's not the end of the world. Paying Charles Barkley the amount of money they're going to be paying him every year to not talk about the NBA is foolish. They should have figured something else out, because I don't get the point. And you can't tell me, oh, wow, Charles is going to talk about everything under the sun. It's going to do great. We've seen Charles talk about everything under the sun, and it hasn't done great. You know, if people wanted so badly to hear Charles Barkley's opinion on the news of the day, King Charles would have worked. It didn't. If people so badly wanted to hear Charles Barkley's opinions about everything else in sports, the podcast he does with Ernie would be like one of the biggest hits in all of podcasting. And it does, I'm sure it does well, but it's people have the opportunity to hear Charles Barkley's opinions on everything all the time. There's a reason why Inside the NBA does the kind of numbers that it does compared to just Charles Barkley talking. All right, well, those are my two cents on the Barkley situation. We're now going to go to the pre-taped podcast that Drew and I did on Tuesday. So let's dive into the topic of the day or of the week. It says a lot about how light this week is that this is the topic of the week, but the lead defeat call of the men's 100-meter final on Sunday won by Noah Lyles. We will play that for you here, and hopefully NBC won't get this entire podcast taken down, or I guess the IOC, but I think we can claim fair use on this, and so we'll play the call here.
There's an Olympic gold medal waiting for somebody who wants it the most. Now Thompson starts to wind up. Curley's going with him. This is close. Jamaica's going to do it. Kashane Thompson is a gold medalist on debut.
All right, so obviously, this was a very, very close race, photo finish. You cannot blame Lee Diffie for not knowing immediately who won, but obviously that's why you say something along the lines of, well, it's a photo finish, or we don't know who won. And certainly Diffie's call was not contingent. It was not, it looks like X won, you know, it looks like Y result. This was Jamaica has done it. Kashane Thompson is a gold medalist. You know, that's all very definitive in a moment that's not very definitive, right? You know, so that was a mistake. You, Drew, in the article that I had you write for the site on Sunday, you mentioned the call at the end of the Kentucky Derby this year by Larry Kalmus, which was also a photo finish. We're going to play that one now.
It is Mystic Dan down toward the inside with the lead in the final 16th. Forever Young, Sierra Leone is coming. These three coming down to the wire. Who's it going to be? Oh, it's a photo of the Derby. Oh, it's a photo. Was it Mystic Dan? Or was it Sierra Leone? Forever Young was between them. Catching Freedom finished fourth. A photo finish to decide the 150th Kentucky Derby.
So obviously, there was a better, you know, method here of dealing with the uncertainty, which is to convey the uncertainty. If Lee Diffie had it back to do again, I'm sure he would. But, you know, it was a mistake. You know, it's not the end of the world. It doesn't mean that Lee Diffie is a bad announcer. It doesn't mean that he shouldn't have the role. I actually was planning on writing something about Lee Diffie, probably not an actual article on the site, but maybe a tweet or something, just pointing out that, you know, he's become one of the top tier voices for NBC. I think he does a great, great job on racing. He's going to do NASCAR for NBC later this year. And, you know, I felt like Tom Hammond is great and deserves to be, you know, remembered. They played his call on Usain Bolt winning by daylight at some point over the weekend. It was a reminder that Tom Hammond was so underappreciated for being a great voice all those years on NBC. But I felt like Diffie was a great, you know, a great replacement, right? And I still feel that way, but it was a mistake. It was not the smart way to handle that. And so that's life. We've all made mistakes. I've made mistakes. It's not the end of the world. And also, when you make mistakes, you're going to get criticized.
Yeah, John, you know, when you commissioned me to do the piece, I was definitely apprehensive because, one, I agree with you. I think he's been a good replacement. You know, I've proven his skill and adeptness at calling track and field. And B, just on a more, like, a broader general note, I'm not a huge fan of announcer criticism to begin with. I think most of it is pretty nitpicky. You know, these guys, at least the ones that are being written about, are at the top of their profession, right? They're better than 99.9% of play-by-play announcers out there. They have been through, you know, the vetting process, so to say, and have earned their spot by and large behind the microphone. Additionally, most of the criticism that play-by-play announcers get, I think, is pretty small potatoes, at least compared to Diffie's call of the 100 meter. A lot of it is kind of minute stuff. It doesn't happen at, you know, pivotal times, generally speaking. And most of it comes down to opinion, right? Like, I just don't like this person's style or the way he called this. And generally speaking, I think, you know, it's fine for people to have an opinion. I just don't find that, you know, compelling to write about, because everyone has different tastes when it comes to play-by-play announcers. And the unfortunate thing about Diffie's call of the men's 100 meter was that it came at the pivotal moment of this sport, right? This is the gold medal race in the 100 meter of a Summer Olympics. You know, I think when a lot of people think about the Summer Olympics, this is one of the primary events that they think of. This is going to get one of the bigger audiences of the entire event for NBC. This had arguably the most high-profile American athlete in the entire Olympics, you know, maybe besides some of the basketball players, in Noah Lyles. So, you know, the culmination of all of that kind of made for a much more high profile blunder than we've often seen when we kind of talk about some of the recent examples of announcer blunders. I think in the article I mentioned the Brian Anderson call during Virginia Purdue during the Elite Eight. I mentioned Mike Breen's Jason Tatum game winning bucket that, you know, he said was getting waved off by the officials. These, while they're mistakes and, you know, I guess are somewhat worthy of criticism, I don't think those rose to the same level as Diffie's call on Sunday. It's just very unfortunate. I know he's come out and owned the mistake. I'm sure if he got a do-over, this would not have happened. I'm positive that if given another chance, you know, in future track and field events, he will tread lightly if it's a close race. Hopefully not too lightly. But yeah, it's just an unfortunate mistake. But, you know, everyone's human, so you can't fault him that much for it.
Yeah, well, let's start with the simple fact that this is not a career-defining thing. I say that because Elliot Friedman, 8 years ago, and Rio had a worse mistake where he, you know, mistook, I think it was Phelps and Lochte.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Those two for each other and called the racing correctly. And who even remembers that? Now that's Canada. So, you know, maybe Canadians remember it, but that is something that did make news here. But I mean, who remembers in this neck of the woods that that happened? Other people have mentioned mistakes like Charlie Jones in 1988 in an Olympics. Obviously, people remember that 36 years later, but most people don't remember that. Let's be real. A lot of these mistakes, they come and go. They gnaw at the announcer when they're trying to go to bed at night, but people don't really remember it. It's not that big of a deal. I mean, and as far as career-defining blunders go, that's, you know, what Tom Brenneman did, right? You know, it's not an honest mistake scenario where you say something. And if Tom Brenneman can come back from what he did, then I'm pretty sure Lee Diffie is fine for this relatively.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not minor in the context of the race, but in the context of, you know, just real life, it's a minor mistake.
Let's just say Lee Diffie will not be demoted to the CW in future Olympics.
Well, or it does happen.
Future track and field events.
I do want to say it does happen. You know, we talked about Chip Carey, and you can play that clip here from the 2009 playoffs.
Line drive, base hit, caught out there, runner tags, here he comes.
Chip Carey had been someone people were not loving. Richard Sandomir was roasting him every week in the New York Times. He was the main MLB voice on TBS. And that mistake, that was it. And they got rid of him. The other really high-profile example of this that I can think of off the top of my head is Marty Reed, the racing announcer, who, very prominent racing announcer for ABC for years, did a lot of big races, was calling the race where Dan Weldon died in IndyCar, but he was making so many mistakes on the calls that they dropped him. And, you know, that does happen. So you don't, you know, like, I'll put it this way. If Lee Diffie makes the same mistake again in this Olympics, I think he might not come back next year in 2028 in the same position. I mean, he might not anyway, because even though he does a good job, he's not the highest profile person. But certainly if he makes a mistake again the same way, you know, it's, you know, two strikes, you're out, really, in a lot of ways. You can't keep messing up. That's the thing. One mistake is not a problem. The same mistake over and over and over again, that's where it gets to be an issue. And so for Marty Reed and Chip Carey, I would say it wasn't one thing, it was multiple things over time.
It struck me as pretty interesting that he would be so definitive in the call. You know, I haven't listened to a ton of his announcing outside of the Olympics, but I've always found him to be, you know, talented. So this seems kind of like you're breaking the cardinal rule of track and field or any racing sport for that matter. You know, he's, you know, obviously a motorsports commentator as well, you know, that if it's a close race, you don't make a definitive call at the end, right? This is something I'm sure he's experienced in the past. So I think that was what surprised me the most about it. And in the moment watching the race, you know, your eye is, of course, drawn towards the Jamaican one, because Diffie is talking about the Jamaican runner. And two, it wasn't until late in the race that Lyles came on. So I understand the circumstances of how it happened. And in the moment watching the race, I too thought Thompson had won. But that's why, as a track and field commentator, it's your job to be able to identify when a race is too close to call. So idiots like me who are watching at home who don't watch track and field, but every 4 years at the Olympics, are well informed in the moment and aren't misguided to think that, you know, a Jamaican had just won the gold medal when in reality it was the American.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's a hard job to do, because you also don't want to underreact. Joe Buck underreacted to the helmet catch in the Super Bowl in 2008 because he wasn't sure if the catch had been made. So he underreacts this spectacular play, and it's probably the biggest demerit against him You know, that's like the LeBron 2011 finals for Joe Buck, was kind of selling that helmet cap short. Well, that or the disgusting act play with Randy Moss. But that's what people, you know, I bring up LeBron because LeBron, all of his successes, all of the ways he's proven himself over the more than a decade, and people will still say, well, back in 2011, and that's what it is for Joe Buck. No matter how much he's improved, no matter how much he's done, it's, oh, well, you said this about Randy Moss, or you blew the helmet catch and all these other things. Yeah, okay. He did that in the Bush administration. But you don't want to do that where you're making, you're underselling a great play because you don't really know what happened. Or even like with Brian Anderson in the bubble when OG Anunoby at the Raptors hit the game-winning shot against the Celtics. And he Brian Anderson says, oh man, he made the shot. Does it count as the question? That's an appropriate and responsible call, but it doesn't really work well historically, right? You don't want to play a call that's kind of unsure over a play like that, you know? So it's kind of a no-win situation. You just have to get lucky that your instincts are right. You know, when Paul Pierce hit this, what appeared to be a game-winning or game-tying shot against the Wizards in the 2015 NBA playoffs, Dave Pasch went full bore on the call. And ultimately, it was waved off. But that's fine, because ultimately, okay, the shot didn't count. If the shot had been good, but Dave Pasch had said, well, we don't know if this is good, then that would have not been a great thing to do. So that kind of backs up the scenario with Diffie where, well, hey, if Kishane Thompson had gotten, had actually won, and he nearly did, then it would have been a great call. But it is different when you're talking about a race than something as open and shut as did a shot count, right?
Yeah.
So with a race, it's different because you really, truly don't know. It's not open and shut, did the shot count. It's, well, it's a photo finish. We actually have to analyze this and see who won the race. And I do think it's a hard job. I couldn't do it.
Oh, yeah. And I think that's why Larry Colmus's call of this year's Kentucky Derby was so good. He captured the excitement. He laid out the scenario exactly. You know, he said, was it Mystic Dan or was it Sierra Leone, right? So he named the horses that could have been the winner, but then also he kept the ambiguity and the excitement factor. So there is a way to do it, but it's a tough needle to thread, even tougher when it's a 100-meter race and your entire call is confined to under 10 seconds. It is possibly the toughest event to call in all of sports. So definitely want to show some grace for Lee Diffie in that regard.
I do think that, you know, it is worth noting the NBC camera cut to Kishane Thompson immediately. So it wasn't like Lee Diffie made an executive decision. Obviously, there was a lot of thought that Kishane Thompson won internally. Addo Bolden conveyed some uncertainty, but ultimately was also of the mind that Kishane Thompson won. So it's not like Lee Diffie just decided, you know, when everybody else was like, wait, hold on. You know, it wasn't like that. It is what it is.
Men, when we leave the house, it's phone, wallet, keys. How's my hair look? But if you're experiencing hair loss, you may not be so confident when you step outside your door. It's time to get that confidence back and restore your hair with Hims. No man wants to lose his hair, but for men, it's actually quite common. And now with Hims, the solution is simple. Try Hims Hair Loss Solutions and you'll be joining hundreds of thousands of subscribers who got their flow back. Men, real talk. The only thing worse than losing your hair is waiting forever for it to grow back. That's why you need Hims, and you can start seeing your hair grow back in as little as 3 to 6 months. Hims provides access to a range of hair loss treatments that work, all from the comfort of your couch. Hims makes treating hair loss simple, with doctor-trusted treatment options and clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil that can regrow hair in as little as 3 to 6 months. They offer personalized chewable, oral, spray, and serum treatment options, so you can find what works best for you. The process is simple and 100% online. Just answer a few questions and a medical provider will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your treatment is sent directly to your door. Hims has hundreds of thousands of trusted subscribers. So if you feel like you're losing a part of yourself with your hair loss, get Hims and get your confidence back. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/Hail Mary. That's hims.com/Hail Mary for your personalized hair loss treatment options. hims.com/Hail Mary. Results vary based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil. Prescription products require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if a prescription is appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for full details and important safety information.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of 5-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, let's go over some of these viewership numbers really quick. Of course, these are the NBC press released combined primetime window Adobe Analytics, blah, blah, blah numbers that they've been using for, you know, the entirety of the Olympics. So Sunday, the day of the 100 meter final, garnered 35.4 million primetime viewers. And I'll let you fully explain those caveats in a second, John. That is up 103% from the equivalent day in Tokyo. This is coming straight, essentially, from NBC's press release. And then Saturday, which featured Sha'Carri Richardson, Katie Ledecky, Simone Biles, was also a pretty banner day for NBC, with a combined 34.6 million average viewers, again, with all of those caveats. That was up 111% from the equivalent night in Tokyo. So, John, I know we ran through a lot of these caveats last week, but you can flesh them out if you want. And then also, you know, just what are your top line thoughts about, you know, the continued success and big numbers coming out of NBC?
Well, I mean, we have to put them in context, right? I don't think anything NBC is doing is illegitimate, but obviously it's not in it. It doesn't really fit into any prior context. A lot of people who write about ratings are just going to take the press release and go with it and convey to people that these numbers are in the same line as the numbers that we've seen for the Olympics before. That's just not true. If you go back to Rio and you have 30 something million viewers, well, if you added in the 2 to 5 o'clock daytime window, what would that audience be? If you added in not only the 2 to 5 o'clock daytime window, but the 2 to 5 o'clock daytime window, including all of the NBC networks airing events at that time, what would the number be? Right? So, you know, it is what it is. I don't think that NBC is doing anything illegitimate now. And I will note, NBC has not compared these numbers to 2016 or 2012 or any prior Olympics other than 2021. You could credit NBC for that, but also, you know, those comparisons probably wouldn't be flattering if NBC did a full apples to apples accounting. Because I think what NBC is doing is that they're going back into Tokyo and they're adding in some of the daytime live events to the primetime figure, right? But, you know, again, it's easy to do that with Tokyo because Tokyo was a disaster, the most unwatchable Olympics of all time. So if you go back to Rio and you do that, it's not going to be the same positive story. Certainly, if you go back to London, now London is difficult because obviously, I mean, it's a totally different method of airing the Olympics that NBC did back then. But, you know, I mean, these numbers are already either slightly above or slightly below London. I think they might be slightly below London, despite all the additions. And London was just one primetime window on one network with one measurement company. It was also an Olympics that occurred, you know, when twice as many people were watching linear television. So there was an advantage there as well. But the numbers are what they are. If you're comparing them to the current context of television, that's fine. These are great numbers by any standard. But obviously, if I had to guess apples to apples, if you could even do an apples to apples comparison, I would suspect that this comes in below Rio, below London. I mean, it already is coming in below London, but below Rio, below London, below Beijing, and that if you had a complete apples to apples figure, completely apples to apples, this is probably going to be in the same range as Athens, you know, yeah, probably in the same range as Athens, which isn't bad given the change in television viewing. Not bad at all, really.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to find NBC complaining about any of the viewership this time around. Looking forward, John, to the rest of the Olympics, couple events I want to highlight. Actually, three. Both basketball teams, USA men's and women's basketball, are now in the knockout rounds. And then, of course, the USA women's soccer team, which actually, as we record, is set to play in about 30 minutes in their semifinal game. Broken out from the rest of the viewership, John, how do you think these particular teams, these particular games will do the rest of the way?
These numbers are pretty much what you would expect. 10.9 million for the first men's game, 9.4 million for the third. Those are the two that aired on NBC. Women's games, you know, a few million here, a few million there. They're all on USA Network. These numbers are not anything all that different. I know NBC has said that at least one of those two men's games that NBC outdid all the games from Rio and Tokyo. And yeah, I mean, it's not, you know, it's a good number, but ultimately you would expect an Olympic men's basketball game on NBC to get in the neighborhood of 10-ish million viewers. I mean, that's not that surprising to me. I do think, you know, obviously the women would be drawing better with Caitlin Clark on the team. Yeah. I mean, obviously, I don't think there's any question about that. I think the decision to keep Caitlin Clark off the team was probably not made for basketball reasons, even though it is justified from a basketball perspective. I think it was probably made because there's a lot of irritation among certainly Cheryl Reeve and other people that Caitlin Clark just marches into the WNBA as a rookie and immediately is viewed as the savior of basketball. And kind of a sense that they don't want to validate that. And hey, that's fair. Do what you want to do. But certainly, if Caitlin Clark had been on the team, the viewership would be higher. You know, I mean, and the other thing, too, is this team is not really playing that impressively so far. I mean, you know, they are winning because they're superior. It reminds me of like the 2000 men's team when they won. But it was really only because they were superior. They weren't playing their A game. Right? The Vince Carter dunk aside. So you're talking about a women's team that's not really bringing their A game. They're getting by. You know, they look completely listless at times. And granted, the men have looked, they've had their periods of listlessness as well. But really, there's no energy surrounding this team at all. I mean, at all. Now, there was no energy surrounding them in the All-Star game. They came out totally flat. The energy was from Arike and Gumbawale. The energy was from the WNBA players. They wanted to win. The women, they know that they've got it won. The game has not developed the same way on the women's side internationally. So they know they have it won, that they just have to, you know, give a passing grade, just coasting, right? And that's what the women are doing. They're coasting. And it's not particularly fun or compelling to watch.
I'll get that story after the podcast, John. All right, John. Let's move on. We got a couple more quick topics to cover. First off, the NFL Sunday Ticket trial. A federal judge last week overturned a jury verdict in that trial. The NFL was set to have to pay over $4 billion in damages. That could have been tripled under federal antitrust law. Of course, they were going to appeal had the judge not overturned the verdict, but it seems they will not have to worry about that anymore. Now they will, I suppose, just have to worry about an appeal from the plaintiffs now. So good news if you are Roger Goodell and the 32 NFL owners.
Yeah, let's be real. This didn't make any sense. The rationale behind it was, you're expecting me to believe that the 1961 Sports Broadcasting Act only applies to broadcast television. There was no other form of television at that time. You could just as equally argue that the law applied to whatever forms of television and media distribution existed, right? So to me, I thought the initial decision was ridiculous and a waste of everybody's time and energy because it was inevitable that it would get overturned. That's why you'll notice, ultimately, I didn't really write a lot about it because I didn't think I would have to. It never occurred to me that the NFL was going to lose that case. It was ridiculous. So I will say that even if it had been legitimate, the NFL was going to win. Let's be completely real about the way things go in the good old United States of America. If you've got the money and you've got the power, the laws do not apply to you. In this particular case, it so happens the NFL really had a good argument. But even if the NFL didn't have a good argument, Google doesn't have a good argument, I'm sure they'll still find a way to survive that antitrust decision that was put down earlier this week. If you've got the money and you've got the power, the laws do not apply. They just don't. So it's no surprise.
Yeah, I think you're right. The NFL really had a strong case here. The case actually kind of got overturned on some sort of technicality surrounding, some of the accounting that the plaintiffs did. Seems the plaintiffs, summoned, two witnesses that perhaps maybe fudged the math a bit to come up with a number that was, much larger in terms of the damages the NFL owed than maybe they should have. And that's ultimately what got the case overturned by the judge. But aside from that, like you said, you're completely right. On the antitrust grounds here, just given the Sports Broadcasting Act of 1961, as you said, the NFL had a really strong case. If this had proceeded, it is really, very unlikely that anything would have came of it. So this is probably the result we would have gotten in the end. Now it's just a bit expedited. One more thing, John, before we go, and that is actually an interesting story about Major League Baseball. For the first time, they have decided to create a flexible schedule for the World Series should the ALCS and the NLCS end early enough. John, why don't you lead us through the details of how they could possibly move the World Series schedule up a few days and actually get themselves some more favorable television windows?
Well, yeah, I mean, the World Series right now is set to begin on a Friday night yet again, which would mean Friday twice and Saturday twice if the series goes seven, and no Sunday game unless there's some kind of rainout. Not a great schedule. This is one, and I'll keep putting this at the feet of Michael Mulvihill at Fox. I'm not trying to be any way about it because I happened to agree with Mulvihill at the time, but he's been a big proponent of Friday and Saturdays being much better nights for television in the out-of-home era. And I agreed with that for a long time as well, because it made sense, right? But what we've seen lately is that no, Friday and Saturday nights are still bad for TV, even in the out-of-home era. And I just don't think it's a coincidence that you have at Fox someone who is a big proponent of Friday and Saturday nights, and then MLB makes this plunge into Friday and Saturday nights. Maybe he has nothing to do with it, but that's my suspicion that Mulvihill was an advocate for that. It's totally baseless, but that's my suspicion. And again, I don't think it was a bad idea. There was a period of time where I truly thought that Friday and Saturdays were going to be, you know, kind of new kinds of nights in sports television because of out-of-home viewing, but it has not thus far played out that way. So for MLB, this is another year Friday night start. Now, if you get the move up to Tuesday, then you get a much better schedule that they had for many years. Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday. If it's a sweep, you still lose Sunday, but we haven't had a sweep in the World Series in 12 years. So more than likely, you get a Sunday game. Fox does not have a doubleheader on that Sunday. You know, the NFL has gone out of its way to harm the World Series by no longer giving Fox the doubleheader during the World Series. And it's understandable because the World Series beat the NFL a couple of times in a row in 16 and 17 when everyone was talking about the NFL. The NFL will soon be dead, said people who have not yet been held accountable for that nonsense. Obviously Sundays are difficult because you're facing the NFL without an NFL lead-in. And this year, that Sunday game is Cowboys 49ers. The NFL, really? Cowboys 49ers? Man, that is so screwed up.
Do you think the NFL even thought about the World Series? I know not giving Fox the doubleheader, they definitely thought about it. But you think they actually went ahead and put a huge game Sunday evening?
Well, honestly, I think that they wouldn't have put Cowboys 49ers on there if they thought there might be a World Series game, because the World Series will still take viewers away.
Mm-hmm.
It's the World Series will be much more hurt than the NFL will be. But I mean, even opposite the NBA Finals in the bubble, and those ratings were, as we know, horrible, the NFL still did weaker than normal numbers those 2 weeks the NBA Finals was on. Like, it doesn't really matter what the competition is. If you never face competition, any level of competition will hurt you. So I actually don't think the NFL would have put Cowboys 49ers in that window if they had thought there might be a World Series game. But still, man, I was thinking that the Tuesday start would benefit the World Series because they might get a Sunday game, but you can go ahead and put that away. That there's no chance. Cowboys 49ers is a killer for that week. But even so, I still think the Tuesday start is better because Tuesday, Wednesday, you minimize your Friday and Saturday games, maximum one Friday and one Saturday game compared to two Friday and two Saturday games. And they probably should shift to a Tuesday start in the long term. They need to figure out how to get that done. That's ultimately the best case.
I agree, John. You know, we got some more Olympics coming up, but of course, preseason football begins in earnest this week. We're going to get hot and heavy here pretty soon. All right, John, I think that about does it. Why don't you close us out?
Yeah, another week down, more to go. We'll be back with more stuff on the SMW podcast.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.